Hi again, everybody, and we welcome you back to the B Squared Show podcast. Jordan Burnfield and Brian Beto with you. This is our second ever episode, and we are now a couple of weeks into the Cubs season. Now, if you're wondering where we went last week, which means Dad, Mr. Beto, you're wondering where we went last week, we had some major life news happen to you, Mr. Brian Beto. You and your wife, Sarah, just had your first child, your little daughter, Grace. And so congratulations to both of you. We are so excited, and I'm really happy for you guys. And now, for the first week, you have been a father. So this is amazing. Congrats. And I mean, you're really kind of a slacker for not doing the podcast last week, despite the birth of your child. But besides that, we're really, really happy for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I totally agree. Was a slacker. But it's been a lot of fun. It's just weird being a dad, I guess you could say. But I've already told her that she's grounded. She can't wear that out of the house. All the sort of dad things that you practice by the time she's a teenager. But it's funny. We joked about calling her something Cubs themed last week, whether it be Addison or Rizzo. And it ends up being Grace, which is, of course, after number 17, the first number 17, not the current one.
Yeah.
But that was completely not planned. And it's kind of funny because we joked a little bit about before we started the podcast that I was a Sean Dunstan guy. Number 12 was my favorite Cub, go along with Ryan and Grace. And I was thinking about that earlier when somebody asked me about Mark Grace, and I was like, oh, I was a Sean Dunstan guy. But when I look at me as an adult fan, I think I would have not liked Sean Dunstan if he was playing right now, because I'm so into the, you know me, I'm such a new age guy, into the sabermetric advanced guy. Dunstan swung at everything. He never walked.
He's no OBP.
He threw the ball over the diamond.
Right. Terrible OBP guy. That he would not have been your guy. He would not have been a high war.
Because when I was nine, that was my guy. I once brought the Sean-o-meter to Wrigley Field, and he was traded the morning before I brought the Sean-o-meter to Wrigley Field. It was devastating for a nine-year-old. Absolutely devastating. But now I look back and I'm like, I don't know if I would have liked Sean. But
you would not have.
He hustled so much. He was so fun. He was so fan-friendly. And he seems like an all-around good dude. But the guy swung at everything. And what was he, a 270 hitter with a 300 OBP?
If that's but
fair investment.
Right, but let me just say this to you. I mean, you have been friends with Ryan Sandberg for a long time, and thanks to you, I have become friends with Ryan Sandberg. The least you could have done was name your daughter Ryan after our beloved Ryan.
Oh, man, I can't do that, though. But even Ryan knows I'm a Sean guy.
Yes, he does. That's true.
Ryan, I'm like, Ryan, can you give me Sean Dunstan's autograph? That'd be great. In my house, I think I have in my crawl space this – I used to collect baseball cards back in the late 80s, early 90s. I obviously haven't kept up with it much, but I have some really strong, like, Greg Jeffries rookie cards, some Cal Eldred, some John Olerud.
Oh, Cal Eldred.
But I have a whole section devoted to Sean Dunstan, and I have his rookie card when he was picked number one overall, which I believe was 84, which is 84 is the year I was born, ironically enough. And that was just my guy. I don't know. We joked around before the podcast, too, about – I was thinking, like, we had Grace at first, Ryan at second, Sean at short, and then at third, it was just a smorgasbord because there was such that huge gap between good third basemen, between Sano and Aramis Ramirez.
What about Vance Law?
Bouchel. Vance Law was solid. Kevin Ori. I'm forgetting guys. Do we even try Tyler Houston at third base from time to time?
Yes. They tried Tyler Houston at third.
Remember Leo Gomez?
Yes.
I think he played third too.
Oh my gosh. That,
when's the last time you thought about Leo Gomez?
Never. But this is why this podcast is going to be great, because we can just celebrate the terribleness that is Chicago Cubs baseball over the years.
Talking about Leo Gomez.
Oh my gosh. Leo Gomez.
But I appreciate the congratulations. It's been a lot of fun. And, Gracie hasn't missed an inning, if it makes any difference.
That's good. Now, last week when we did our first podcast, we talked about the potential pitfalls of you being a father and a Cubs fan. Have you already run into the case where Gracie needed to be changed, but you had something to watch during a Cubs game that delayed you being able to be a good father?
So I've thought about this throughout, believe it or not, throughout the course, and it has not happened yet.
That's
mostly
good.
Because there hasn't been a lot of close games yet. The most recent game, the Sunday game against the Rockies, where they lost 2-0, was pretty close, but Gracie was passed out through the entire game. She must have had a rough Saturday night. But they had a lot of blowouts. So I've seventh, eighth inning, I've been like, you know what? It's all right. I'll go change the baby, win Father of the Year, earn some points with my wife, you know, that sort of thing during the Cubs game. It hasn't come into play as of yet. However, with the Cardinals, Cubs first matchup of 2016, there's a chance that it could happen in the next 3 days, if I'm being totally honest.
That's amazing. All right. Well, listen, I'm glad that Grace didn't put any money on Lester's start yesterday, because as we record this on Monday, April 18th, I went to Wrigley yesterday. I thought John Lester was great.
He's brilliant.
And you can't fault him for giving up one single run, but Tyler Chatwood morphed into Cy Young yesterday, and the Cubs got two hits in seven innings. But they're obviously off to an excellent start. They're 9-3 on the season. Their run differential of plus 40 so far is the best in baseball. The only team that's close right now is the Cardinals, who are 7-5, have a plus 35 run differential, and the Cubs is 40. So the Cubs and the Cardinals are both playing great ball. Both teams have won 7 of their last 10. They're going to meet beginning tonight as we record this podcast to begin their first series of the year. And before we get to that, Beto, because we definitely want to talk Cubs-Cardinals and the first rivalry series, we've watched the first 12 games. We've seen what this Cubs team can be. And obviously, over the weekend, they had a couple of games in which they did not hit. But for the most part, the Cubs have been clubbing around their opponents. They've scored 71 runs and allowed 31. And one of the reasons that the Cubs have been so good offensively is that they are taking a ton of walks. I mean, they entered the weekend leading baseball in number of walks taken. Last year, they led baseball in walks taken. Their on-base percentage is very high. Last year, they were fifth. I wrote a column about this week for the Daily Herald, just talking about how when you watch the Cubs hit, you know, we can always sort of joke about the first 12 games, what's sustainable when you've only seen them play 12 of 162. Right. I think that's going to be one of the things that will be sustainable, right? The fact that this Cubs team is now comprised of players who are going to work counts, that are going to be near the top of the league in pitches per plate appearance, and are going to wear teams out. And Jed Hoyer said as much with Bruce and I and Inside the Clubhouse last week on The Score. And I think that anyone you talk to around the team or people that know the game would think the same thing. So we could easily come out here and say, you know, 159-3 and then 11 wins in the playoffs and we'll get it done. But the truth of the matter is that they're going to be really good, I think, for this reason. We know that they have good pitching, but their offense is just going to wear the heck out of teams that can't pitch to them.
It's a relentless approach, and it's got to be exhausting for opposing pitchers and managers. And it was something that we all anticipated, was how good this team would be in that area. What's encouraging to me is that they're 9-3. They haven't knocked the cover off the baseball. They've won games based on that relentless approach. You look at some of the numbers, and Anthony Rizzo, I know, hit that go-ahead homer, that first home run of the game against the Rockies on Saturday. What that broke an 0-for-19. Ben Zobrist is in a funk right now. Jason Hayward. April's historically been his bad month pretty much every year throughout his career. That's the case again this year. He hasn't hit the ball very well. Chris Bryant had a couple of good games over the weekend, but his numbers aren't where they're going to be. So it's so encouraging that they're 9-3, and they're not hitting the cover off the baseball. It's just that approach that has gotten guys on base that has really allowed for them to somehow, I don't want to say manufacture runs per se, but get runs when they're not necessarily seeing the ball like a beach ball, which they're not right now. So it's so much fun to watch. And it's just got to be completely exhausting to an opposing pitcher to start an inning. And you have Dexter Fowler, Jason Hayward, and Ben Zobrist in the bottom of the first or the top of the first. And the approach that those three guys have, you know you're in for a battle every time those guys come to the plate. And that carries over to guys like Rizzo and guys like Brian as well. So it's so much fun to watch. And I even seen more of it out of Soler. And I think that's contagious just based on the fact that some of those other guys in the lineup in front of him are doing the same thing. So when you sit down to watch a Cubs game, you better allocate 4 hours from now on instead of the typical three that we've been used to over the years.
I think this is going to work out good for you. You know why? Because Grace can take a 2-hour nap and it'll be the fifth inning. You're fine.
It's magnificent.
Right.
It's absolutely magnificent.
So you don't even have to worry. You can just, she can nap. You can sit there with a beer and watch the game. And it's a win-win for both of you.
I couldn't agree more. It's worked out so well so far. We got those late night 9 p.m. games out of the way early on in the season. Now we're back to the central time zone for the time being, and it's just worked out pretty well.
Let me tell you, with the schedule I'm leading right now, 9 p.m. games are not my friend.
That's not good for you.
That is not
good for me. They're out of the way, though. For the most, I mean, obviously, we're going to go to San Francisco and the Dodgers and things like that. However, we got some of them out of the way early.
I'll say this. The Cubs need to think of me when they make their schedule in future years. So just if they could have every game at either 1:20 or like 6 o'clock, that would be fantastic.
You love the East Coast. And I'm in my 30s. We're both in our 30s now. Those East Coast time zone games are just awesome.
Oh.
When they're in Atlanta or Miami, it's just awesome. So of course we're getting old. And now I almost hate the interleague matchups when it's our year to play the AL West, because I know it means more 9 o'clock start times.
Oh, 100%. I mean, just eliminate us playing West Coast teams. That would
if
be
I
great.
Don't see the Mariners for the rest of my life, I'm totally okay with it.
Totally. Unless they want to come here. That's fine.
That's,
if they want to come here, fine. We're not going there. Not doing it until I have a different job where I don't have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't have these West Coast games. So right now, you look at the numbers, the Cubs are third in baseball and on base percentage. You know who's 1 and 2? Pittsburgh and St. Louis. Cubs have the most walks in the league right now. St. Louis has scored the most runs in the league. So the two teams are going to meet now in their first series of the year, and media types like us are going to play up the fact that this is the return of John Lackey in game one to face his former mates, and people burned Jason Hayward jerseys and the best fans, the most classy fans in baseball.
BFIB.
Yes.
BFIB.
Right. So they burned Hayward. Like, how do you hate Jason Hayward? He's like the nicest guy ever. He even got interviewed, and his comments were that, hey, they bought the jersey. They can burn them if they want to. He had nothing but nice things to say about the Cardinals. And I know that in his opening press conference, it rubbed some people the wrong way that he was saying that the Cardinals core is a little bit older than the Cubs young core.
He's literally speaking facts.
Right.
With that
he's point. Speaking facts, A, and B, it doesn't strike me as the case that Jason Hayward is meant that in any kind of malicious way. He's just saying that the Cardinals core is more veteran than the Cubs, which it is. And I think that it appealed to him to play with a young core of Cubs and try to grow with them to see what this will become. I don't think he meant any ill will towards the Cardinals. And Mike Matheny is stirring the pot and saying that this isn't going to resonate well with our team. And listen,
Wainwright.
And listen, I think it's great as a fan because it adds more intrigue to the games. It makes it more exciting. It's good in baseball, and the Cubs and Cardinals are both good and they hate each other. I think it's great, but I just think a lot of this stuff is overblown. I think if the BFIB are, you know, booing Hayward every time he comes to the plate, it's bad for him. But if that's what they want to do, then fine. Although the thing I'm most looking forward to, honestly, is the Best Fan St. Louis Twitter for the next 3 days.
Oh, it's going to be at Best Fan St. Louis. If you don't follow it already on Twitter as a Cubs fan, it's a must follow. It retweets all sorts of just great literature from Cardinals fans throughout the country. I will say this, and they're just looking for a reason to not like Jason Hayward. And when he's made those comments, I don't blame Cardinals fans for being angry about it. If they want to boo, that's okay to me. As long as you're not, like you said, malicious about it, it's okay to do so. At the end of the day, he was a Cardinal for only 1 year. And then they tried to retain him. They tried to keep him. They were in a bidding war with the Cubs from reports out there that he took less guaranteed money to go to the Cubs and leave the Cardinals. That would not sit over well with me if I'm a Cubs fan and he did the exact opposite. Booing's okay as long as you're not you know, personal about it. It's part of the rivalry. It is what it is. And the fact of the matter is the Cubs have a much younger core than St. Louis. He wasn't saying that St. Louis was dropping off this year and that they weren't going to be good. They're clearly going to be a team that's in the mix for the entire season. He was just going ahead and making a statement that you look around and you got the guys like he's the oldest of that team. He's got of that core with Rizzo and Bryant and Russell and everyone else. So they seem to get along really well. From what I've been told, he fit right into that whole Brizzo mantra of them just all hanging out outside the stadium and things out of the ballpark and things like that. So
does he sing karaoke with those guys?
I don't know if he's made his way to Stanley's yet on a Sunday night to sing karaoke. However, I will say that I hear that he does fit in right away. You kind of get a sense of who hangs out outside of the ballpark together, and you hear some things. And
are you a karaoke guy? Do you sing karaoke?
I've done it in the past. I've done some. I believe it or not, when I've had a few beverages, I can do, and it may not sound like it from my voice right now, I can do a little Johnny Cash with a really low voice.
Wow.
Not great, but it's low, and it's kind of funny coming from me. And I tend to do, maybe I'll joke around with some Mr. Big. I'm the one who wants to be with you. Yes. Things like that.
Yes.
Just things to make fun of me for. I'm not a huge karaoke guy. So what about you?
I have done karaoke once, and it was 3 weeks ago, the night that Deanna and I got engaged.
Okay.
After dinner, we went to a bar. And so the funniest thing about it is I realize that people do karaoke for fun. They are not actually singers, right? Like, the point is that everybody stinks, but you're doing it because it's fun and whatever, it's goofy, and you want to have a good time, you want to live the dream. I got it. No problem with that. However, I am not usually a fan of going to karaoke bars because I'd rather hear the song sung by people who are professionals who are actually good at singing than people butcher the music and sound terrible, right? So so we're at this bar in Galena. Shout out to Gobbies. How are you guys? So we're there, and I'm listening to people sing, whatever. And Deanna is in a choir. She is actually a singer and very, very good at singing. And I'm not just saying this.
So she can carry you.
Oh,
if worse comes to worse.
I mean, her back was sore. I mean, she was, it was ridiculous how much she's carrying me. So we're both in a great mood. We just got engaged. We're excited, whatever. So we go up there to sing, and I mean, I don't even want to do anything. I've never done karaoke because I feel humiliated to try to sing. I mean, I have to stay in my lane here. I'm not good. So we did Torn by Natalie Imbruglia.
Great song. Great 90s beat.
Yes. And we did Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith.
So you're like Kawasaki.
Pretty much. Yes. But, but I just wanted to be sort of like lowly singing in the background. I mean, she's the one you want to hear. I stink, so let her carry us. And I sang more quietly so that people could hear her. And then they were cheering at the end for her and not me, which is
modest. Stop it. They were cheering for you. A standing ovation the entire time.
Yeah, right.
I know it.
Okay, so that it was, as we take it back to sanity and the Cubs-Cardinals game coming up tonight and this series this week, I don't look at this series. I know that there's going to be a lot of people that think that this is sort of the early statement or an early test or an early tell of what these two teams can be. Do you look at this series like that, or do you just look at it as three games between two good teams in April? Because that's kind of where I'm at on it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. You can't – teams are – look at where the Cubs were last April to where they finished up. Two completely different teams. Same with St. Louis due to injury mostly. They're important – from a standpoint of it's likely that the division's going to go down to the last week of the season, maybe between three teams. So they're important in that regards. It's not a huge litmus test that the media is going to make it. There's going to be some hot takes coming in on both sides of the media and the fan base about whoever wins these three games. The bottom line is, though, it's important to win solely because you want to have that lead and being in the pole position throughout the course of the season where the Cubs are right now. They're going to go on stretches like the Cubs have been where they've lost two out of three to mediocre teams. Remember when they lost, they got swept by the Phillies in July at home last summer, including the no-no to Cole Hamels, and everyone was ready to jump off a ledge that the season was over.
It was. It was, right?
Yeah, exactly.
A Jake Arrieta pitch, right? Wasn't that his last loss?
Yes, he pitched that game.
Yes, prior to the playoffs, that was his last regular season loss.
Yeah, exactly. So and look what happened.
That is still his last loss in the regular season.
Yeah, that would have been the last time he gave up runs at Wrigley Field. It's definitely possible.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter in that regard who wins these games, and people are going to make way too big of a deal out of it, regardless of which direction it goes. It is important, though, in the standings just to win games and continue to win as much as possible and stay ahead of St. Louis and Pittsburgh for the most part. Both Chicago and St. Louis have pretty easy schedules. So you want to chalk up as many W's as you can. You want to fly as many W's as you can from a Cubs fan perspective. But at the end of the day, it's just the takes are just going to be steaming on both sides, regardless of what happens. And we see it every year. You look at some of the Cubs-Cardinals series in the past and what they've meant. I remember going in 04 to Old Busch Stadium, and LaTroy Hawkins walked in Mike Matheny in the ninth inning.
Do we have to talk about LaTroy Hawkins today?
Sitting front row, and he walks in Matheny for the winning run to come in to score. And that was the year the Cubs were supposed to be the team. They were the clear World Series favorite like they were this year. We talked about this in the last podcast, some of the 04 comparisons. But then the Cardinals were the team that resurrected the career of Chris Carpenter and got some crazy contributions like they always do from random people to go ahead and win something like 105 games. So they're fun games early on in the season, but they don't necessarily tell the tale of what's going to happen by September and October. So my suggestion is just to have fun and enjoy them. So you have Lackey going back against St. Louis. Hayward's making his return. Both teams are really good. The rivalry is great when both teams are good, and it's good for baseball, and that's the case again this year.
When I watch John Lackey pitch, I want to like him. I mean, so far his first two starts –
He's lit the mound on fire.
Yeah, the fire emojis are all over the field when he's pitching. So I don't know. Here's what I'd say. There are people on Twitter, where obviously all the geniuses reside, who are saying that, like, I can't like John Lackey because it's like Jim Edmonds and he's been a Cardinal and it's hard to be a fan of his. Well, Jason Hayward was a Cardinal too to all those people. But I can like John Lackey. I mean, if he pitches well, I have no problem liking John Lackey.
It's
just
crazy
his first two starts
well
have not been
how
good.
How much performance dictates your opinion of a person.
Right. Like, I hated Jim Edmonds. His whole time
He was my least favorite
Cardinals.
Cardinal ever.
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 Yes, agreed. I hated him on the Cardinals. When he got to the Cubs, it was weird at first. And then it was like, wow, this guy's making great catches in the outfield, and he's belting home runs for us, and this is great. So
he's the man.
Right, okay, fine, I'll root for Jim Edmonds now. But I could see why it would take some people a little bit of time to warm up to the idea that Jim Edmonds, or rather John Lackey, is now a Cub, and it's hard to be a fan of his, and they need to see a few more starts. My whole thing is, if he pitches like this every game, I'm not going to like him because he was not very good. But
yeah,
if he pitches well, I will like him.
Like the whole, it's not as much as he was a Cardinal for years and he killed the Cubs. He was, what, a year and a half as a Cardinal?
Right.
He wasn't necessarily a fan favorite with back in when they called him the Anaheim Angels or the Boston Red Sox. He rubbed some people the wrong way, and it's come out recently that he just doesn't care what the fan or media thinks. What's important is that his teammates seem to like him. He seems to be pretty well liked in the clubhouse, which is cool.
Lester and Ross love him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Lester, who seems like the most down-to-earth guy, is really close with him, so he doesn't care. But I'm with you. He was one of those guys that when you always want to win and you always want to beat the Cardinals, but when he was on the mound, you really wanted to beat him. I totally agree. I get the comparison. I do.
Okay, so then, because I feel like Jim Edmonds was a Cardinal for many years. John Lackey was not a Cardinal for many years. Right. John Lackey was on the 13 Red Sox team that won the World Series and was pitching big games. So this idea that Cub fans can't like him because he was a Cardinal, I mean, I don't even get it. I think Cub fans won't like him if he's bad, right? That's how you're not going to like him, if he's bad. So far, I mean, his second start turned out not to be bad. It was shaky early, but he ended up having a pretty good start. I mean, the first inning, it was like, uh-oh, fire emojis again. And then it was
like Jason Hamill in the second half. That's or, how yeah,
like. Right. Or it was like the poop emojis with the smile. I've never understood why the poop emojis have a smile. Like, why is it happy, right? Isn't that supposed to signify
bad? Aren't you happy after you take a dump? I am. I'm pretty excited about it.
Right. But like, yes. But like, my point is, I figure most people are trying to express something went bad when they put the poop emoji, and instead there's a smile on it. So I feel like there's a weird juxtaposition here. Anyways,
that goes along with your opinion of the first podcast of people calling things Xavier. That opinion's right up there. The poop emoji and the X pronounced in Xavier.
Yes, this is very fair. There are a lot of weird things that go out of my brain. I don't know what to tell you. However, so then we're past this on Lackey, because I feel as though I will like John Lackey if he warrants us liking him, meaning he's going to pitch well.
He's got some really white teeth, too. Have you noticed that? Extremely white teeth.
He should totally do commercials for toothpaste or toothbrushes. He has, like, amazing pearly white teeth.
Yeah, if you see his teeth, you know how they say 4 out of 5 dentists recommend Trident? If they see his teeth, they're going to say 5 out of 5 if he's eating Trident. Because that guy has got some great P-dubs, pearly dubs.
His teeth are, like, the whitest teeth I've seen since Mike Francesa's teeth. Have you seen Mike Francesa's teeth?
It's unbelievable. I feel like – Friends is on in the background right now on my TV. And we don't have to go in discussion about Friends and whether or not it was a great show or not. I know it doesn't compare to Seinfeld. I get it.
Yes.
But there's an episode where Ross gets his teeth bleached, and then he has a date with some girl in her apartment, and she puts on a black light and his teeth glow.
Oh, yes. I saw that one. That was funny.
It's a funny episode.
Yes.
But I feel like that's what happened if John Lackey walked into a room with a black light, is that his teeth would glow.
Well, that's why the Cubs' new clubhouse has those beaming lights that, like, go red and blue. Because
like,
right, they go off of John Lackey's teeth, and he keeps the room lit up. So yeah, that's another reason they signed him. Theo and Jed are geniuses, clearly. They signed him to light up the new clubhouse, obviously.
That's
okay.
Very true.
Yes.
Sorry, I totally cut off your thought. I can't let this slide without talking about John Lackey's teeth.
No, this is extremely fair. The other thing that's been really good so far about this Cubs team, and I know that as we record this podcast on Monday the 18th, they're only 12 games into the season, but the pitching has been outstanding. They've allowed 31 runs in 12 games. And, I mean, Jake Arrieta is – I know that we could keep saying that he's great, but, I mean – I honestly can't, probably since Pedro in 99, Maddox in 95 or 94. I mean, when was the last time that you watched a pitcher dominate this much for this long, right? I mean, other than the playoff games where he clearly tired after 250 innings pitched, he has been not only great, but like almost literally unhittable every one of his starts.
Yeah, you talked about – I was listening or watching the game yesterday, the TV broadcast, and either Len or JD had referenced Ryan Spielborgs, who is the Rockies color analyst, said that
– This makes me feel old, by the way.
Remember that guy, Ryan Spielborgs?
So yesterday, we're sitting at the game, and Eric Young is on the Rockies coaching staff. Renee Latchman is on the Rockies coaching staff. Did a great job managing one game in Cubs history.
Yes, he was interim manager, right?
Yes, for one game. It was a great game. I don't remember it.
Who did he come after? Was he after Baylor was fired for a game, or was Baylor suspended?
Was that the game?
On leave or something, and he filled in for a day?
Was that the one game before Bruce Kim?
That's what I'm thinking.
I think it might have been.
That's my guess. I could be wrong.
Somebody listening to our podcast is looking this up on Baseball Reference as we speak
to find out the
managerial career of a Rene Latchman.
Was he the Marlins' first ever manager?
I don't know. That might be. But then their manager is Walt Weiss, who was the shortstop, obviously, for the Rockies for a long time. So now, Brian Beto, as we talked about getting older, we are now at the point where players that we watched growing up are the old guys managing the team. This is where we've gotten.
Yep, exactly. I'm waiting for Dante Bichette to become their hitting coach pretty soon. And
what
Andres
about
Galarraga
yes.
to become more on the bench.
Vinny
that,
Castillo.
That team could rake, by the way. We don't have to break in the ins and outs and the
Blake Street Bombers
replacement for these Rockies players. But I thought the same thing. Eric Young coaching first. And he reminds me of my favorite Cubs team that did not make the playoffs. So we can get into this in future podcasts.
2001?
The 0-1 Cubs team were last. And him and Ricky Gutierrez up the middle. But I thought the same thing. That's really funny that you bring that up. And Rene Laxman, believe it or not, was the Florida Marlins' first manager in 1993.
That is a fun fact, Brian Beto. I had fun with this fact. Yes.
It was 2002, by the way. I'm on Wikipedia, and it has Rene Laxman. He was a manager for four teams. I didn't realize he did the Mariners and the Brewers in the 80s. Marlins from 93 to 96. It has his win-loss record by team. And then it says Chicago Cubs, 2002, 0-1. So it was 2002. So I think it was either the game between Baylor and Kim taking over. I guess that would make sense.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go. But then, I mean, I'm looking at the pitching for the Cubs, and their pitching has been absolutely awesome. And the Cubs right now are second in baseball in ERA. And in terms of runs allowed, they are second fewest. I mean, you can go up and down the categories, and the Cubs pitching has been great. We know Arrieta is great. Lester, I think, has gotten off to a great start. I know he lost the game on Sunday the 17th as you listen to this podcast, but, you know, Lester was great in that game.
He was terrific.
He was great in his first start, and his second start was shaky, but it wasn't bad. He ended up giving up 3 runs in 6 innings, and the Cubs scored a lot of runs for him. So he hasn't had a bad start yet. I really have been impressed with the pitching so far because you knew that the hitting was going to be good, and you knew that the pitching was going to be good, at least at the top of the rotation. The only guy that hasn't been excellent so far is John Lackey. Everybody else has been pretty darn good. Even Kyle Hendricks has been pretty solid.
Yeah, the rotation has been outstanding, and you mentioned the top of the rotation, and clearly we expected big things from Arrieta and Lester, and Lackey has been great. Hamill, a lot of people said he was hurt at the end of the year. He didn't use it as an excuse. We just assumed it was that second half Hamill plague that has been a problem for him over the last couple of seasons. He's been really good so far. Maybe it was the injury, and Kyle Hendricks has pitched extremely well. I think he's an excellent five starter. I think some of the peripherals last year suggested that he would have a pretty good year. You look at some of the projections going into the year, like the Bill James and the Pakoda and the Zips and things like that. And they really anticipated a nice year for Kyle Hendricks. So if you have him doing what he's doing, and he's probably not going to sustain the 1.5 ERA or whatever he has, he's going to keep your team in a lot of ball games. And with that offense, it's really all you can ask for. So yeah, the rotation numbers outside of Lackey, you're probably not going to see them being able to keep this up throughout the entire year, but they're going to be pretty good. And that's going to be an underrated strength of this team. And I'm looking forward to seeing how they progress throughout the year.
We talked to Jason Hamill on Inside the Clubhouse last week, and he was talking about how he's had to change some of his routine, some of the way that he's prepared for games. I just feel like last year's second half Hamill was, and Theo and Jed said this all off season. They were saying that the injury really hurt him. I feel like he's going to have a very solid year. I think people lost faith in him very quickly because
I did. I'll admit it.
Yeah.
I was frustrated.
Oh, I did too. I mean, and he was terrible in the playoffs. I mean, he was terrible,
awful.
But my sense is that he's going to be more consistent this year than he was last year. I think that the injury really did hurt him, and that you're going to see a better version of him throughout the season. I mean, maybe not like great in the first half, bad in the second half, just something that's more leveled off somewhere in the middle
somewhere
there.
Somewhere in between, right?
But I think that's more realistic from Jason Hamill. And listen, we know what Kyle Hendricks is. He's got to be fine. He's got to be very careful with where his pitches are, or he's going to have trouble because he just doesn't have, you know, lights out stuff. And I don't mean just the velocity, but I just mean that it's not like he has a big bender curveball. I mean, it's a lot of fastball changeup. So he's got to be on the corners of the zone at the top and bottom of the zone without being in the middle. And, you know, when he does that, he's very effective. But I've said this to a lot of people. I think that Kyle Hendricks is probably one of the best fifth starters in baseball. I mean,
underrated.
Right. I mean, when you consider who some teams are running out there as their fifth starter, I think that he's very solid as a fifth starter. And I'm really pleasantly surprised with what I've seen so far with the pitchers that you didn't necessarily expect to be great. And I think most importantly, Arrieta is back to being superhuman, super freak, and John Lester has had a great start to the year. So
that
I think is as important. I mean, we always talk about the offense, but that's as important as anything. I mean, if they don't pitch, the 158 win dream is cannot be realized.
It's not coming to fruition, huh?
Right.
No, I agree. And I think Hendricks, he's very effective, and he's got an extremely high IQ, not just baseball IQ, but he's a smart guy. And he's been very effective this year, and I think he's going to continue to be, and he's going to keep you in a lot of baseball games. And I was going to make a point earlier about Jake Arrieta and Ryan Spielborgs. Ryan Spielborgs, the Rockies analyst, said that Arrieta's Saturday performance was one of the most dominating pitching performances of all time. And Lennon JD made it seem like, yeah, he was good, but was it really any different than what we've been used to? Did that stand out compared to some of the ones that we've been spoiled and accustomed to over the last, 120 games of baseball? And it's been a lot of fun to watch. And we've just been so spoiled and so used to him being so dominant that when he does something like this against the Rockies, where he strikes out 9, I believe, over 8 innings of scoreless ball, you're just like, ho-hum, he did it again. But the Rockies are sitting there going, wow, that was absolutely incredible. One of the most dominating performances he's ever seen. And we're getting this already from Arrieta. And Lester's been so good. I don't think it's fair when people labeled him as a disappointment last year or say he had a disappointing season. I think he caught some bad luck at times and he got off to a rotten start in April and he was pretty darn good the rest of the year. But if they keep doing what they're doing and at this rate, and yeah, they're going to come back down to the earth a little bit with their ERAs, that's all you can pretty much we can ask for from this rotation. They've been very good.
They have been really good, and the Cubs are off to a 9-3 start. And 159-3 is still possible. So this is great to know. All right. So anything that you're looking for in particular this week from the Cubs? I mean, we'll talk to each other again next week. But anything that you're particularly looking for?
There's just one thing I have to get off my chest.
Okay.
About the Cubs this week, and it goes.
You know what really grinds my gears?
And you're going to agree with me. I'm just telling you right now.
Okay.
Is there any team in baseball that could have a guy that's 29 years old and his name be Jeremy Hazelbaker and him turn into Babe Ruth beside the St. Louis Cardinals? There's not one other team that could have someone named Jeremy Hazelbaker that can come up and act like Babe Ruth.
He came out of the factory. They manufactured him. They took him out of the plastic wrap and they threw him on the field. And that's what it is. We talked about this morning on the show, I don't know how it is. And you're exactly right. I don't know how it is that every year the Cardinals have some guy who no one has ever heard of, who just comes up and is automatically good right away. There is never a grace period for Cardinal no names. They immediately come up and are immediately good. I've never heard of another team with other players that have this happen. I honestly believe that somewhere in like the Anheuser-Busch factory, they're behind like the giant barrels where they're brewing beer, there's like a Cardinals player factory where they're just putting together arms and legs and bodies of future players. Like Randall Grichuk comes up automatically good right away. Steven Piscotty comes up. You're like, what is this? An Italian dessert? No, he's going to hit a million home runs off
exactly.
The Cubs. Like, what is going on with them? Yes.
It can't be like Jeremy Smith. It has to be Hazelbaker.
Right.
But you look at it, it's not just these Piscotty and Grichuk, obviously big time prospects. You look at some of the guys that have come up, and we always joke about guys like Bo Hart and Stubby Clapp.
Oh my God. Bo Hart.
Yeah, Bo Hart. What's this guy yesterday? Fryer, the backup catcher, because Pena's on the DL, hits the game-winning home run in the 8th.
Yeah.
Hazelbaker's been outstanding. Remember John Rodriguez, maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, was another outfielder that was like a journeyman 4A player that comes up, and he turns into Babe Ruth right away. I don't know how they do it. It's unbelievable. And we were just joking around that, of course, his name is Jeremy Hazelbaker, and the guy's unbelievable.
Of course.
I think about that fantasy team. I have to. started him over Hayward a couple of times.
Hold on. I need to ask you about this. I don't do fantasy anymore, but when you draft your fantasy team, do you try to avoid taking Cardinals?
No. I did when I was in my teenage years.
Okay.
There comes a certain point in your life, and it's not just fantasy baseball, but you really start thinking about how do I win money over what's in my heart? And you always take the money and you pick with your head. So I have in that league, I have Adam Wainwright, which has been a complete disaster so far. I also have Hazel Baker. And in my other league, I have Michael Wacha and Randall Grichuk. So I don't really avoid it the same way I no longer avoid taking Aaron Rodgers or some Packer if I have a fantasy football draft. I think I was like 12 where I was like, no chance I'm taking Brett Favre. No chance I'm taking Ron Gant, Ray Lakeford, or Mark McGwire. It's just not happening.
Ron Gant. Hold on. Did I tell you? I don't know if I ever told you this story. I met Ron Gant.
Of course you have a Ron Gant story.
No, so
I have a Ron Gant story.
Because when I covered Cooperstown when Maddox and Thomas went into the Hall of Fame,
right?
I was working for another radio station, and
I was working for that one too,
right? And then its subsidiary station rested in peace later on. However, well, maybe not in peace, but it's resting. Anyway, so I'm in Cooperstown, and I'm out at this first event. They had this event where there were Hall of Famers that were going to be teaching kids baseball at some local Cooperstown field, right? And there are a bunch of TV reporters there because Mike Schmidt and some of the other Hall of Famers are going to be speaking. So we were going to ask them questions about the incoming Hall of Famers. And one of the TV reporters, I'm looking at him, I'm like, my God, this guy looks so familiar. Ron Gant is a local sportscaster in Atlanta now and could not have been nicer. Like, I'm looking at him, I'm like, God, that guy looks. And then he comes up to me and introduces himself because we were both standing there, waiting to do the same piece. I'm like, I was a big fan of yours, not when you were on the Cardinals, but when you were on the Braves.
He was a really good player for both teams. I liked Ron. Who didn't like Ron Gant when he were on the Braves, right?
This is why our podcast is great.
Like Ron Gant.
Yes, because our podcast has had mentions of Vance Law and Leo Gomez.
Don't forget about him.
And Ron Gant today. This is why this podcast really has potential.
Gosh, my internet is brutal. I'm trying to look up some Ron Gant advantages. Of course I am. But I just know that how fun he was to watch in the outfield. I hated when he was on the Cardinals. I liked Ray Lankford, too.
Yeah.
And I liked Bernard Gilkey, too. And then, of course, they all played for the Cardinals, and I couldn't like him anymore.
And then he started Gilkey Windows and Doors. That's really weird how his second career became that. I didn't even know.
He also was an actor, if you don't recall. He was in Men in Black when the fly ball hits him in the head when he's on the Mets, I believe.
Wait, that Bernard Gilkey? Bernard Gilkey is in that movie? Seriously?
He got one of the greatest cameos. I'm pretty sure it's Men in Black, right? It's either Men in Black or Independence Day. Some alien movie with Will Smith.
Oh, my God.
There's like one
Isn't
of
that like half of his movies?
Shea Stadium, I want to say, and the ball's hit out towards Bernard Gilkey, and he's like looking at the ship instead of paying attention to the game, and the ball just hits him in the head.
Ronnie,
I'm like,
tell us about Bernard Gilkey.
Sure.
Yeah. So anyway, but on the Bernard Gilkey note,
I threw you off the Bernard Gilkey reference, didn't I?
No, it was wonderful, and I appreciate it. But I think that's going to wrap up this week's podcast. We really appreciate those of you that tuned into this zany hour of whatever we just did. And please make sure to subscribe to our podcast. And you can do so by going to iTunes. It's on iTunes now. We will also be posting the link on Podomatic. So if you know Podomatic, you can search the B Squared Show and you will find it there. And we will be posting the link to it on our Twitter accounts at Brian Beto and at Jordan Burnfield so that you can find it there. But great talking to you. Again, Beto, I don't know if there will be any major life events to happen between now and our next podcast, but one can only hope that there are for next week's podcast. I mean, I really think that we've probably peaked because you just had a kid, and I don't think that either of us can top that for quite a while.
So, not until October or November if the Cubs are in the World Series, right?
True. Or
that's about all we can do to come close.
Or until I get married next year. That's
I guess that's somewhat important. You make a good point.
But that wouldn't top it necessarily. I mean, it would be like on on similar footing. So
yeah, be on par.
What's bigger than getting married and having kids? Like, those are pretty much the biggest events. Unless the Cubs win the World Series.
I don't know. I mean, I'm grilling out some pretty good burgers tonight. That's probably pretty close. I had a summer shandy. I'm a total fruity type of beer guy. Judge me if you'd like. I mean,
who are you talking to here? I'm the guy.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. I feel like that would, you'll respect that.
Yes.
I'm glad I told you that.
When Deanna and I go out for drinks, she gets the red wine. I get the white wine. She will drink the drink that's more typically a man's drink, and I will drink the drink that is more typically a woman's drink.
You got a Cosmo right there.
I don't know. I'm not a Cosmo guy because I don't really like vodka. But if there were a Cosmo that if it like didn't have vodka in it, I would probably drink that. Yeah.
Gotcha. That makes sense. I don't know. Yeah, I should have known who I was talking to. I bet you enjoyed a tall blue moon. We're not making fun of any guy that enjoys a blueberry or orange flavored beer.
Ooh. The blueberry. That's a little weird for me. Although the banana beer, have you ever had the banana bread beer?
No, but you're really, really indicting yourself right now. I
know,
I love it.
That's actually a really good beer. I like that beer.
Jordan's going to go hang up and have a Zima and a Bacardi Razz after this.
I am going to
even make that Zima anymore.
I honestly have no idea, but I really hope that they do just so that we could get a sponsorship with Zima for our podcast. The B Squared Show, presented by Zima.
Oh God, you know you've made it when that's the case.
100%.
Well, it was a lot of fun. Yeah. I appreciate we've taken some time here, and hopefully next week we'll have a lot more wins to talk about. I'm guessing 750 baseball is going to be sustainable. That's our word of the day, sustainable. So hopefully the Cubs will be still playing near that clip by the time next week when we record this again.
All right, talk to you after the 7-game winning streak.
Have a good one.
All right. That's Brian Beto. I'm Jordan Burnfield. Thanks for listening to B Squared.